1 hour, huh? You told me I had two before I got up here. Okay, this is a fun part for me because, and for Dana and I promise you, you get to talk to Dana. Probably during, we'll do like a question and answer thing at the very end. This is a fun opportunity for us because what we get to do now is we get to take you to the country that we know and that we love. And this is an opportunity for us to show you some of the, introduce you to some of the people that we get to minister to, and really how we seek to, just what our ministry looks like over there. Now, if you follow on our newsletters, and there's a sign-up sheet for our newsletters back in the back with our prayer cards if you guys would like one. If you follow any of our newsletters, you'll see that I have found that using videos it's an effective way to bring you guys there. Obviously, not all of you can hop on a plane and come and minister with us, and so we put these videos together because we want to give you guys a sense of actually being there, because deep down, I mean, we think of you guys in our partnership as being there with us, and so each month, we try to faithfully communicate to you all that the Lord is doing over there through us as we have partnered for the gospel. So what we're going to do, we're going to continue with that theme. I had a friend. You'll notice that this video is much better than the ones I do because he's a professional. And I had a friend put together a video that highlights our ministry. So I hope you guys get to enjoy this and see what we're doing. And then what I'll do is we'll talk a little bit more about it and then we'll do a Q&A. So
welcome to Paris, France. Paris is a place where people come to see the elaborate and beautiful cathedrals, the amazing architecture, and the famous landmarks. In fact, Paris is one of the most photographed cities in the entire world. While the neighborhoods and the buildings are beautiful, spiritually, France is a very ugly place. France used to be called the eldest daughter of the Catholic Church. In fact, they have their own Pope. But today, there's a new religion staking its claim on France. 60% of the population still profess to be Catholic, but the largest practicing religion in France is Islam. In recent studies, the Muslim population has increased 143%. Islam, however, isn't the official or even the largest religion in France. That would go to secular humanism. The word for secular humanism in France is laïcité. A well-known political scientist said that laïcité has become the first religion of the Republic and it should be obeyed and followed. In 2013, the French government created 15 points of secularism and they are to be posted in every French classroom here in France. These 15 points of secularism will be used to keep any semblance of religion out of the classrooms. Very soon, parents with children in the public schools will be required to sign a document indicating that they will respect and demonstrate the laws of secularism. This is the context in which Dana and I are living and doing ministry, and here is where we are raising our children. Now, I would be lying if I didn't say that we have had our frustrations and challenges. But through it all, we fix our eyes on Christ and we place our confidence in Him. If there is one thing capable of turning hearts to Jesus, it is the gospel. We may not be able to grow disciples who love and follow Jesus using our own hands or with our childlike level of French or our foreign culture and habits, but we are certain that the gospel can do just that. Our ministry is devoted to the proclamation of the gospel. This is why we are here, and this is our sole objective. Let me show you what that looks like in Versailles. Welcome to Versailles, France, the home of Louis XIV, the Sun King. Behind me, he built this magnificent chateau. One could spend weeks taking pictures of all the beauty of this place. During his lifetime, Louis XIV made life very difficult, if not impossible, for Protestant Christians. But today, there's a Protestant church just next door. In 2011, this is where Dana and I joined a church planting team and where our ministry began. This is where we equip and encourage fellow believers for the work of the ministry. I help out with the preaching and the teaching. I lead the services. I help with the prayer meetings, the elder meetings. Basically, Dana and I do whatever it takes to build up the body of believers here in France. One of the most interesting facts about our church is that we are the only evangelical Protestant Christian church in a region representing over 187,000 people. If you were to ask me, how does one begin planting a church in postmodern Europe? I would say, start with where you live, with your neighbors, in your neighborhood. When Dana and I moved into this neighborhood, we knew that our home would be a place of ministry. And we were intentional about planting the seeds of the gospel with our neighbors. And so we take advantage of every opportunity that we can to have them over. And there are two holidays where proclaiming the gospel is natural and expected: Christmas and Thanksgiving. After a few weeks of living here, we quickly learned that the ability to speak English was like possessing gold. So in 2013, Dana and I began an English club to meet and invest in people. During the summer, we host short-term teams from the States to teach a two-week intensive course. After the course, we remain in contact with these individuals. In our context, proclaiming the gospel means taking advantage of everyday opportunities to plant seeds for the kingdom. In recent years, the evangelicals in France have united under one vision. They want to see one church for every 10,000 people. Now, this is what the French call a grand vision, because it basically means that the churches in France must triple. This may seem like an impossible dream if it were not for our faith in Christ, but we know there is no vision too large to exhaust His power or His resources. The context of our lives and ministry is extremely hostile to the gospel. But I like what I read recently in an article. The author said that missionaries must be first and foremost people of the word.
They must know it, believe it, announce it, and teach it. That's why they go. That's why we send. For how will they call upon Him whom they have not believed? And how are they to believe in Him of whom they have never heard? And how are they to hear without someone preaching? And how are they to preach unless they are sent? Dana and I are committed to being people of the word, founded in it, built upon it, announcing it, and teaching it to anyone who will receive it here in France.
Nothing else comes as close as being as powerful and effective for the saving of souls.
So that is where we live, that's where we minister, and that's what we do. And if you looked at that video, you might have noticed that there's a, basically you could cut our lives in half. There's a major aspect of our lives that are devoted to reaching out to our neighbors and our community right there where we live. And there's another aspect of where we are involved in equipping the body to do the work of the ministry there in Versailles. And so first thing I want to focus on is what we do with how we reach our neighbors and how we reach our community. And you might have noticed that we do that, one of the ways that we do that is by teaching English. So what we started, and as I mentioned in the video, what we started to notice is that I would do the dishes, and I would look out and I could see that there were our neighbors would gather in our front yard. I don't know why, but we moved there, and all of a sudden, they would just stand right in the middle of our front yard. And I thought, well, that's just kind of strange. I don't know. Maybe we should go and talk to them, right? So we would go outside, and as we would go outside, I would say, this is a great opportunity to practice my French. We just got there. And so I would speak in French and they would shift to English. And I would say, no, we need to keep speaking French, so I need to practice. They said, no, we need to practice with our English. And that's when we realized it's like, okay, we need to profit from this. We need to take advantage of something that they want. And so we started putting together short-term teams. And for the last 3 years, we've had short-term teams come, and for the last 2 years, we had them teaching English. And what we end up doing is I contact a missionary from Teach Beyond. And what she does is, for example, if you guys would like to go to France to do a two-week intensive language course, I contact a missionary from Teach Beyond. She will come here, and she will teach you guys on how to teach English. You guys will prepare lessons and things like that, and she'll organize it. She even makes sure that she'll fly down there with you guys to France. And for me, what we do is all of the family, we get on our bikes, and we just start putting invitations into all the mailboxes in the community. And we charge them like 15 euros. If we didn't charge them, they would know something's up. So we charge them 15 euros. And just to come and learn English. Now, here's another thing that I noted, too, is that if you want them to come to a church to learn English, they're not going to do it. And so what I did is I started a government-approved association. It's called Your American Neighbor, because they don't want to learn English. They want to learn American English. They don't even say anymore, do you speak English? They say, do you speak American? And so they said, if you're going to start this association, make sure that you put the word American in there because that's what they really want to learn. So we call it Your American Neighbor. And so what they do, now what I've done, I have this association that's approved by the government. That means that I can use all of the government buildings in my town. And so and for cheap, practically for free. And so what I do then is I say, English, 15 euros, and it's right next to where you live in that government building. And they think nothing of it. They think, well, I'll surely sign up for that. That's too good to be true. Last summer, we had 95 people sign up to take the class. That's 95 of our neighbors and 95 members of our community, including government officials. We had the director of security, his kids went to the class. And so what this has done for us is this has made us kind of a pillar of the society that we live in there. We are very well known because what we've done is we have offered a service that all of them want. And so we've offered it and at a reasonable price. And now the mayor has been to our house, all the government cabinet members and all that, they know of us. And the entire neighborhood, we can't do anything without being recognized. Dana one time was at the grocery store and she was backing up and the lady said, do you want me to help you? Dana said, yes, please. And she goes, oh, you're the American that lives right over here, right? And your husband's a pastor? And she said, yes. You know, that awkward moment. But this is what happens to us regularly because we offer these classes. We've made connections, automatic connections with our neighbors and with our community. And it was through these short-term teams that has made it so successful. So you guys would come in and for 2 weeks you teach them English. And for them, they call it better than a vacation for them. Because they're used to learning in a very strict way. And what we do is we make it fun for them. So learning is exciting, they're growing in something, and we're enhancing their quality of life because they know that they can get a better job and they can move up in the ranks. At least that's the way that they see it. And what Dana and I do, we're just the face. We just smile when they come in and we smile when they leave. And at the end of that two-week course, we go up front and say, surprise, we did this and we live right over here. We're your neighbors. And we want to continue to help you guys. And so you guys come to our house on Monday evenings. So what? Not 95. We took the 20 of the advanced English people and they started meeting in our homes on Monday evenings. And what this has done has made a major impact on them because the French, they don't open up their doors for just anybody. And so for us to open up the doors, this makes a major, major impact on them. And so what we do is we, on Monday evenings, we teach English, we make it fun. We do things like we'll go through, they're not familiar with George Strait and Garth Brooks, can you believe it? So we'll make this fun. We'll go through a country song, a George Strait country song or something. And we'll joke about how if you listen to it backwards and suddenly you get your dog back, your wife back, your car. They eat this stuff up. They love it. And then what we do, and here's the fun part about it, is that starts in September. And then we notice by November they start asking questions like, Thanksgiving's coming up. Yes, it is. Are you going to celebrate it? Yes, we are. What's it like? So they start asking questions. They've only seen Thanksgiving on the TV, so they only see it in movies and stuff. And so what Dana and I did after one evening and all these questions, we turned to each other and we said, look, we're going to have to do a Thanksgiving because they're fascinated with it. And it dawned on me, this is a way that we can share Christ with this entire group, to share with them why we are thankful. Where is our source of thankfulness? So we invited them all over to our house. We had 40 people over for our house for Thanksgiving last year. It's much more calm this year, I've noticed. But we had 40 people into our home, and then what we did was we took that group that you guys helped get together through your short-term teams, and now they're sitting all in our living room, and we get to share Christ with them and the source of our thankfulness. And then Christmas rolls around. I had an appointment with the head pianist at the University of Tulsa here recently, because what we like to do is we like to put on a Christmas concert. They love culture, they love music and all that, and they're just fascinated with that stuff as well. And so what we do is that's how we reach our neighbors. We've reached our community through the English, and now we want to reach all the people that are right next door to us. And so we move all our furniture into our garage, and then we put a mini grand piano in our dining room, and we set up a bunch of chairs, 70 chairs to be exact. Now, I want to be honest with you. I didn't do that on purpose. I just started making flyers and started handing them out, and then I went home, and Dana said, she's like my voice of reason. She said, how many did you hand out? I don't know, like 70. She said, what if they all come? That's a good point. Well, I'm gonna stop handing them out now. But they all showed up. All 70 into our home. And so we set out trays and we incorporated other missionaries to help us, like we did with Thanksgiving as well. And then we had this professional pianist play a bunch of Christmas songs. But what we did is we made gospel tracks for them. We took all those theologically rich Christmas songs and we put them all in the form of like a gospel track. And the first thing that we started doing when we had 70 of our neighbors in is we just opened up the scriptures. 80% of them have never even opened up a Bible. Now they're in my living room and we are opening up the scriptures and we're reading about the birth of Christ. I was freaking out. I was like, I cannot believe this. What are they going to do to us when we open up the Bible? But I was so thrilled to know that we could impart truths to them, the biblical truth, the biblical gospel to them during that Christmas time, because it was natural. It was a natural way to do that, much like Thanksgiving. And so that's one of the ways that we reach out to our community there. We're going to do another concert with, like I said, the head pianist of TU when we get back next summer. As far as the church, as you saw there in 2011, we partnered with a French national, and we began to plant a church right there in Versailles, right next to the chateau. I want to tell you that one of the ways that we reach our neighbors and our community is opening up our home. And one of the ways that we build up the body to do the work of the ministry is we open up our home. So what happens is that people, through outreach, through evangelism and what have you, people end up coming into our church in Versailles. And then what we want to do is we want to equip them to do the work of the ministry. And so we invite them into our home, and our job is to really see where has the Lord gifted them, where are they in their walk with Christ, and how can we help them. Those that are gifted musically, that means that we get them involved. And every Saturday we have we practice music at our home. And for Sundays. What else? Also, there are many people that we have sat down with that have had an interest in preaching and teaching. And so we network with other missionaries out there. And I am good friends with the best French pastor in all of France. And what he does is he puts on these preaching, teaching type online classes. And so what we do is we provide the means for the individual that has that desire to take this class, but we also, through networking, we make sure that he knows that it's even an option for him. And so that's another way that we do that. But the point is that we open up our home and we listen to these individuals and then we equip them in whatever way possible to do the work of ministry there. Now here's the good thing about this. We are back for 1 year and one day because of an American law. You have to maintain residency in the United States to keep Social Security. So we had to come back for a year and a day. Now, could you imagine planting a church and then suddenly having to return back to the States for a year and a day? But right now, I'm proud to announce to you that the church is still thriving during this time. And that's because we put in the work on these individuals. We were putting in the work and equipping them to do the work so that we could leave. And what we've done is we have a French national and self-sustaining church that's not dependent on American funds, and it's not an American church. It's French by every means possible. So that is a reason to rejoice. But we put into that work to where now they're thriving. Some of your questions might come up too about the influence of Islam in where we live. Well, what the government has done is they've placed North Africans, you know, these are former French colonies, so they can freely come in and out of France, but they can't always find jobs and stuff. And so what France has done is they've built these cities, these towns that are specifically for North Africans and low income. They build these big towers, and that's where they bring them. These are where these hubs of Islam are. That's where they are. And for us, we're in Versailles. We primarily deal with aristocrats, the ones with the nobility rings and the St. Peter necklace, and they're always wearing navy blue. It's a very, very cultural Catholicism. But in our town, not far from us, 15 minutes away, is a town called Trop, and this is it's basically like going to North Africa. Now, one of the ways that we reach Muslims is that these organizations that are doing Muslim ministries, they know that we're there, and they know that we're not far. And so what we do is we network with these Muslim outreach organizations. They come to France, and what we do is I take them, and I take them to Trop, and I show them around. Where is the mosque? And I take them to the market, and I show them what the market looks like. And then we cast this vision for them. If they want to reach Muslims for Christ, well, then here is one of the ways that you can do that. And another thing that we do with them is we let them know that they're not alone if they go into this particular area. Because I want them to know that we have developed a network of encouragement, a network of pastors. So I'm in Versailles. There are churches within 15 to 30 minutes from our particular church, and we meet on a bi-monthly basis for support and for encouragement. And what we do is, you know, we discover the needs that they have for, you know, we pray for them, and at the same time we help them in whatever way that we can. But what we do is we tell these Muslim ministries type people to say that, yes, here is what you could do over here, and here's where we believe the Lord is working, and here's what we can offer you. We can offer you a support system where whatever you need, we can make sure that we get it for you as you are ministering specifically to Muslims. And so that's another aspect of our lives, reaching our community and then equipping the body there in Versailles, but also through that particular region and through Muslim ministries. I hope that is clear to you guys. And that basically kind of sums up on what that video was all about. And it really sums up our ministry over there. But I'm sure that you might have some questions. So I want to ask Dana to come up, my voice of reason. And if you have any questions, then we'd be happy to answer them. Yes, ma'am. Well, let's just say this. Dana speaks very well, and everybody notes that in France. I speak. And my kids are 100% fluent. The French do not recognize any accent in them whatsoever. So you could just imagine what it's like for them to come home and then to have dad speak French to them, or mom for that matter. It's just not something that they really want to do. In addition to that too, is they only know us from an English speaking basis, so it's very awkward for them when we switch over to French. And Dana doesn't like to speak French to me either, or with me. And it's very, very hard to find French speakers in Oklahoma. Now there's an organization called the Alliance Française, and it's for French speakers to go and gather there and speak French. Well, we thought, well, this is great. Let's go and do that. So we show up, we start speaking French, and they start asking questions like, are you really French? And you know, that was only a discouragement to me, because a real French person, they know right off the bat, oh, this guy's not French at all. And now it tells me something about their level of French. They say, oh, you're a French person. I'm like, oh, no, this is not going to go well, is it? And it ends up being a Saturday where we teach them French, and that's not what I'm looking for. Tim? Yeah, there's 12 different nationalities there. And to me, that's just kind of what heaven I think is going to look like, right? 12 different nationalities there. What we did was, in 2011, there was a church that was already falling apart. They were down to really about 4 families. And the pastor was leaving. So we said, don't leave. Or no, pastor, you can leave. But the 4 couples... The 4 couples, we said, don't disperse. What we'll do is we'll bring in a missionary couple, us, and a French national, and we will plant. We'll move to Versailles, and we will plant right there with you guys. This was a strong group of believers, and that was very encouraging. In the very beginning, when we start off, you're sitting there thinking, wow, this is great. You look around, and you go, man, theologically, we're sound, we're strong. And then a few years went by, and you look around and you just go, we are just a watered down group. Because suddenly it changes. We end up getting new believers in. We have believers in, and then missionaries, we network. And so somebody will be on vacation in southern France, and a street evangelist will share the gospel with them. And all of a sudden, they respond to the gospel, but then they live in Versailles. So what are they going to do? Well, these missionaries will contact me and say, hey, I witnessed to this girl. She's looking for a church. She lives in Versailles. So we have new believers that are coming in from a primarily Catholic background. And what happens is she will come in, and then her parents will be a little suspicious about this whole evangelical Christianity. They know nothing about us. They ask us questions like, how do you bury your dead? And do you believe in heaven? I mean, they're clueless. So they go there to kind of figure out what their daughter is going through. And sometimes they stay. They just continue to show up on Sunday mornings. So you have non-believers. You have those that are new to the faith. And in addition to that, and they're all from different cultures and different nationalities. So it's an eclectic group. I wanted to share, though, because you reminded me of something that I didn't bring up in the past. When we go back next July, the objective is to plant another church. And what we'll end up doing is, I was thinking as I was telling you, there was a couple, 4 couples at a church that wasn't doing well. There's a church 15 minutes from our home that's not doing well, and the missionaries are about to retire. There's a good chance we're going to meet with those individuals. There's only 3 couples there. We're going to meet with those couples, and we're going to see if it would make a good team. And we'll probably, and if it is, then what we'll do is we'll start a church in our home. and then we'll go from there. The good news is that we could plant a church right in the town that we live in. Through the English and all that, the mayor loves us. The community loves us. We've got inroads to getting the government approval to get a building and stuff. So things are kind of lining up in place. So there's a good chance that we end up planting another church after we get there. Sorry. We don't want to see the Thanksgiving and Christmas. What we do sets us completely apart from what the culture is doing. When we do Easter and the culture there, they mingle together. It's hard to see a distinct difference. You know, they do like chocolate bunnies and they do the chocolate Easter eggs. It's so similar that I don't think that it's just hard to create a real difference in what we're doing. But Thanksgiving, it doesn't exist, so it's a big thing. Christmas exists, obviously, but the way that we do it as like a Christmas party and then with music and stuff, completely different. And nobody, no French person is going to have 70 people in their home. They would panic. And that's the reason why they don't have us or in their home very often, too, with 6 kids. I mean, that's insulting to show up at someone's house. It's just like, what are we going to do with you guys? And Danny can attest, it's like cooking for a banquet every night. 3 meals a day, just like cooking for a banquet. And devour food. Yes, sir. Well, you know, it doesn't have to come up in conversations so much because the French will tell you exactly what they're thinking and what they're doing. And so here's what the director of education said. He says out loud to everybody, to the entire country, that that education is the new religion in France, and that the new churches in France are the school system, and the priests are the teachers. That is the new religion in France, and that's what he's communicating. And he's getting no pushback from that, no pushback whatsoever. And I guess, with a nominal Catholic, they're perfectly fine with that. It doesn't really matter. And, you know, if you've ever shared with the Catholic, for me, especially in France, if they get baptized into the church at a young age, then as far as they're concerned, it doesn't matter what happens around them. They're in. And so they're just doing what, you know, they're okay. So France hasn't gotten a lot of pushback, and we don't get a lot of conversation about what the school systems are doing in there. It's kind of, it's a way of life. It's an expectation. It's the way they were raised in some ways. It's not like they had a Catholic education in the secular schools. So they send them there, that's what they're gonna get. And you can look up, if you Google like the 15 laws of secularism in France, if you Google it, it's very thorough. They make it very, very clear. They're eliminating any semblance of Christianity, religion in the schools.
No, it started out when the kids were in elementary school. They came to our house, and that was really intimidating. But after our first interview, the guy said, you know, you guys are doing a fantastic job. We're just looking out for the religious fanatics that are trying to indoctrinate their kids. Okay. He never asked what Ryan's job was, because we just say, well, you know, we move back and forth, and so it's just easier to do that, you know. And after that, I mean, twice a year now we go and get interviewed by them, and We have, I don't know if you guys are familiar with Alpha Omega curriculum, and I mean, it's Bible and God all throughout it. And, you know, we open up Mia's computer and they're looking at it, and I mean, all over the thing is Christian doctrine and things, and they're like, this is amazing. This curriculum is just incredible. And, you know, I don't know if the Lord has just kind of blinded them for the moment, but it really hasn't been. It's actually helpful. They'll encourage us, you know, you need to, you're doing great over here, but you need to sharpen their French, so do this. And it really hasn't been bad at all. So, yeah.
Yes.
Have you guys been affected at all by all the immigrants that are streaming into Europe?
Well, we left before they really started coming in, but what we do know is we remain in contact with some of the missionaries there. It's clear that what they're doing is they're starting new ministries over there to minister specifically to the immigrants. And to do that, what they do is they try to get all the churches together, to work together. And so we've been contacted to say, look, you know, we want to, there's some missionaries that say, look, we're going to lead on this, but we need you guys' support. So we offer our support. Right now, I wouldn't say that the church in Versailles has been affected so much. We're already reaching out to immigrants, you know, at the center not far from our place. But it hasn't been a major impact on that particular church. But up north, yeah, it's been a bigger deal. And there are missionaries that have made that their sole ministry. It seems like we're going to go back to a different France in July. That seems very clear. So we're at this point, you know, before Friday we were talking and it seemed like it was we had an idea what we were coming back to. But a lot of things are changing over there, so a lot we'll see. It'll be a different France in 6 months for sure.
You said that you're one of the only Christian churches in your area, but you also said that you're very close to where a lot of the Muslim groups are.
Yeah.
So is there a reason why, is it just fluke or God's grace that
we're where we are? I can't really anticipate what those rascals are thinking, but no, I tell you, for us, and here's the thing, though. I mean, I wake up every day in France, and I'm just like, how did we get here? And I never would have imagined that we would be ministering to the kind of people that we're ministering to, and I always just kind of figured I'd be stoned to death and ministering to homeless people or something, and instead, you're in Versailles and you're dealing with aristocrats and business people and things like that. And I can't, as you look back and as we moved up there, you know, we were in the Alps when we first got there. So I ended up getting a phone call saying, hey, will you come to Paris? Will you go and plant a church in Versailles? Okay, I think we can. And really there wasn't anything complex about it. We went up to Paris. We had we ate hamburgers with this French guy and said, okay, I'll see you in a few weeks and we'll get started. And so we went back up there and we started filling out applications to go and live in all these towns. And we could have been right next to Trop. We could have been right next to any of these other areas with different demographics. But we knew nothing about that area. We just knew that we were supposed to plant in Versailles. So we started applying to all these areas, right? Every single one of them said no, except one. And so we ended up in a city, in a town called Voisin-le-Bretonneux. And we ended up there. We knew nothing about it. But come to find out, I mean, it was right where the Lord wanted us. Because, I mean, and so suddenly now we've got a Renault plant right there. There's a lot of international type people. Like I said, the aristocrats, and it's just like, when I look back and just be like, how did we get here, and why are we ministering to these people? It was like, oh, we didn't have any other option. This is where the Lord wanted us at that particular point. So I'm kind of fortunate that there wasn't like a choice, and we thought there was, honestly. We were debating about, well, which of the four houses do we want in the city that we want to live in? They all just said, no, 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 yes. Okay, well, we're going there. It was like our fourth choice, but it's like, that's where we're going. But it ended up being a godsend. It was in the ministry over there, as you can see in the videos and the impact that the Lord's making over there. It's been amazing, completely amazing.
Recall one incident you had with some kids that were vandals.
Mm-hmm.
How's that?
Well, the Lord turned it around for our good and His glory. We got up one morning to go to church, and our tires were slashed because there was some vandals and stuff, so we took pictures and we turned them into the police kind of deal. And that's something that you don't really do. And so they retaliated. And in the end, what really happened from that is I get a knock on the door and I open it up and the mayor is on my doorstep to apologize to what's going on. And so was the chief of police. The chief of police, the director of security, and the mayor is at my doorstep just to say, I'm so sorry for that. This is not French. This is not what we do. And we just want to apologize. And I said, apology accepted. Did you know we're doing an English class? Why don't you come to the, you know? And so now if she knows where we live, and so we had some friends there to help us pack up when we flew back here in July. And in June, they were at the school. The mayor heard them speaking English and said, did you know Dana and Ryan, they live right over here, they're Americans? We were already on the mind when she heard English. And that's an encouragement, because if we want to plant a church there, we have to go through her to get anything done. And so the Lord used that really to develop the relationships in the community. And now we have a fence and motion detectors and stuff like that. And I got to share the gospel with the chief of police. That was pretty cool.
Actually, we don't drink wine. We know of it. Ryan had to take some courses when he went to school in Paris, and so he knows just a little bit about it. But we were saved later in life, so we abstain from alcohol. So. But they respect that. And at first, we were afraid to tell them because it can be very offensive. Because they think, well, Americans are just crude, and what's the problem? But they're very understanding and very gracious about it, and they don't have any problems. They do, like if we have an event, sometimes they'll bring their own wine. But usually they don't even drink because I think they think it makes us uncomfortable. I'm not sure.
But you guys need to come and see us. You really haven't experienced anything until you've had a French meal. And it's just, it's an event. And that's why it's an offense to bring six kids, because this really messes up the event. We have done, we've worked it out to a science. We understand what their expectations are. And so when they come into our home, it's just it's a rhythm to it that only they know and that they're used to it. And so we have to be aware of it. So the moment that they come to the door, we have to remind ourselves, these are French people, and this is what they expect. And then we just move them the way that they want. Because we had to learn that. And I took a class, like she said, in gastronomy. And that's when we learned about, you know, what kind of foods to serve and the different plates. It's a 5-course meal when you have people over. And you have to know when to serve the cheese and when to serve the fruit and the coffee and all that kind of stuff. If you don't do that, it messes them up. I had tacos the first time we had a French person over. Never do that. Never. They don't know how to eat a taco. They don't like spicy meat and this self-serve stuff where you get to grab your own cheese and all that. No, no. Yeah. And then we grated the cheese. They were like, what is this? Don't do that. That's me.
Is that what you mean? Well, they have a little cup, and they usually put the egg in it, and then you just, yeah.
Oh, they know. They could tell you all about it. See, that's what we do during our English classes. Pardon? Oh, hey, we've been there.
Yeah.
We've been there. I was at a hamburger place just eating it with my hands and just kind of, you know, and people kept staring at me. And then when their hamburger arrived and they take their napkin, put it on their lap, and then take a fork and a knife. And that's how you eat. So I'm the one that looks like the slob. Well, like I said, after Friday, it's difficult to anticipate, but I just, you know, I mean, at this point, it's just, this right now, our prayers need to be to daily renew our minds and not necessarily be influenced by the stuff that we see there. This could be a fearful time for us. It could be anxiety ridden for us right now, especially I know for Dana, as you think about the children and returning back to, it could just be dangerous. But I think if we just daily renew our minds and go back to what living is all about, the Christian life is all about, and really putting our trust in Christ and then moving and then boldly going to where he's called us to go and to serve, that's where our prayers need to be right now. You know, because right now there's an assault on our family because the enemy wants to use this to keep us indoors or to keep us stateside. And in reality, though, the enemy knows that when we go over there, we're going to proclaim the gospel. And so I think that's one of our greatest challenges right now. But I got to tell you, though, it's not like we didn't anticipate something like this happening there. We were well aware of the potential, and so were the French. They knew how many radicals that they had in their country, and they knew that it was something like 700 of the French left for Syria during that time. 1,200 that ended up leaving, and they knew how many were still in their country during that time. They talked about it. So we could anticipate it. We didn't want to think about it, but so now here we are stateside. And we need to think biblically about this situation. Also, I think another prayer is that we need to continue to reach out to our French friends that we have. And that's hard to do when you're 5,000 miles away. But we need to take the time to continue to reach out to them through Facebook and through emails and all that. Because what we're doing is we're just making those small investments. We got to continue to maintain those relationships. And then when we get to see them face to face, we want to share with them the hope that's within us. Those are two major prayer requests. I think that's all the time that we have. I hope you guys come back this evening.
We'll be back here tonight, so take advantage of that. And again, let me remind you about the event tonight. It will begin at 5 o'clock with eating, so try to be here on time. I know sometimes we have a problem with that, but so try to be here at 5, and if some of you guys can go downstairs and set up some tables ahead of time, that would be really great.
And the newsletter signed up too. Our prayer cards are right there.